Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you, as always, by InsideThePenguins.com, a proud affiliate of the Hockey News. I'm your host, Nick Berlansky, joined, as always, by Nick Horwat. And since the last time we convened on Tuesday, Horwat, the Pens have won two games, and can you believe it? They've scored four, not one, not two, not three, but four power play goals since our last episode. We're definitely going to have to get into that. We have a lot to get into, actually. Sidney Crosby had a special night last night in Montreal. Him and Jake Guentzel have been absolute gangbusters for the Pittsburgh Penguins as of late. We got to talk a little bit about World Juniors because that's coming up, and a couple of Penguins prospects will actually participate this year. That's the first time in a long time. And then there's been some rumblings that the Pittsburgh Penguins and Kyle Dubas specifically are looking for some reinforcements on the trade market. I have three potential trade targets to go through, and we'll get Horwat's reaction and we'll get your reaction, you loyal listeners, in the comments section. But Horwat, before we get into that, last night, 4-3 shootout win. What are your thoughts on that shootout? Because I think that's the most entertained I have been by a shootout in a long time. Both of us are anti-shootout. We want more of the 3-on-3 overtime. But last night is what it was meant to be for the most part.
It was. It's why the NHL adopted it in the first place. It was, in part at least, why they adopted it in the first place. You want the stars to, you know, excel and show their skills. Now, there wasn't a whole lot of that still,
no.
But when it goes on past round three, the intensity kind of goes up a little. The ears perk up. You get a little more, we're going deep. Well, let's see who we're throwing over the boards. After a while, you kind of want just the goalies to keep making saves because you want to see unfamiliar faces on breakaways or on shootouts. Like, you're not going to see defensemen take too many breakaways. You're not going to see these depth forwards take too many breakaways. So suddenly you're thinking, oh, we're about round seven, round eight. We're kind of getting down there. Let's see that depth defenseman get a shot in. You know, let's see that fourth line center get a shot in. That's kind of the entertaining part of the long shootouts, at least for the hardcore hockey fans. Again, if it's not a big name flying over the boards, it's, you know, for the casual fan, maybe it's not as fun. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, they're not pulling out their skill, but it's still, it's one of those things. It's not next goal wins, but it is, the ears perk up a little, you know? Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that it's not like the Olympics and that you can keep reusing names mm-hmm. after third round. I just think that's a bit, I don't know, I just don't like that as much. I like the idea of using your lineup. That's why you have it there. Mm-hmm. That's just me. This shootout ran deep, and while it is still absolutely abolished the shootout, sometimes it does still have its moments, mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, longest shootout in Pittsburgh Penguins history, 12 rounds, ended by Jansen Harkins, of all players. You talked about unlikely names, unlikely heroes. Jansen mm-hmm. Harkins was that for the Penguins last night. I was waiting for P.O. Joseph to get tossed over the boards. I mean, the Quebec native, I thought maybe he goes out there. He has some skill. You know, I've never seen him on a breakaway, but, you know, that's the purpose, like you mentioned. Yeah. But there was not many cooler people in that building than Troy Crosby sitting up at the top, drinking some red wine, swishing it around after every Alex Nedeljkovic save, saying, okay, let's end it now. And I was like, wow, he's just up there drinking some red, cool, calm, and collected, watching his son be amazing and now leaving it into the hands of the depth of the team. I loved seeing Troy Crosby and all of the dads on this dad's trip in the crowd there. Their reactions were priceless. And obviously, Michelle Crecchiolo of Penn's Inside Scoop said, Jansen Harkins and Alex Nedeljkovic's dad were sitting side by side the entire night. How fitting that those two combined to get the victory for the Penguins.
Yeah, it's perfect stuff. And so far, I think we can all say this year's dad trip went much better than last year's, considering yes. No one got traded this time.
Yes. So far, they got another game, and that's in 3 days or 2 days. So let's pump the brakes on nobody got traded, because that's a yet still.
You're right, but still, it is at least a step in the right direction. They decided not to do this dad's trip right next to
the trade deadline.
So already better planning and better decision making this time around. So seems to be going swimmingly. And yeah, those are the stories that we all love seeing. Is the stuff that the personal side of these players. It's awesome to see, and good stuff all around.
Yeah, always a special time whenever the dad's trip and the mom's trip happens for the Pittsburgh Penguins and around the National Hockey League. But it was a special night in general for the captain, Sidney Crosby. Always a show when Crosby goes back to Montreal playing his childhood team. Last night was no different. He scored 3 points against them, 2 goals, 1 assist, his 6th multi-point performance of the season, but we all know why last night was significant. A little piece of history as he moves up the NHL's all-time points leaderboard, passes former Pittsburgh Penguin Paul Coffey for 14th all-time early in the game, then ties former teammate Mark Recchi for 13th all-time with 1,533 points. His next point will put him in sole possession of 13th all-time. Does it in front of his father, which, again, that's a special moment in his childhood favorite, his favorite childhood team's arena, the historic Bell Center. He passes 2 all-time Penguins legends. Very historic night, very important night for Sidney Crosby, the captain who has been lights out all season long.
Mark Recchi also played a pretty long time with the Canadiens, so the connections continue to pile up. He's going to be, for the next couple of weeks, I'd say, he's going to keep passing names because it's a bit of a log jam in this part of the all-time points list, and he's just flying right up. Not too long ago, he passed whoever it was to reach number 14. So this is going to be a quick climb for a little bit, and then, who knows where he lands at the end of his career, and that's a big, long future talk. For now, he's playing at the top of his game, still at the age of 36, and just crushing numbers. I think, man, that MVP talk can get really real, real quick.
It can. I mean, right now it's not, as we're going to talk about it, he's right now tied for 17th on the latest odds that I saw that went beyond the top 10. Tied for 17th right now, and part of that is, where the Pittsburgh Penguins are at in the standings. A lot of people are going to overlook him. A lot of people aren't going to really give him a lot of credit, especially when there's a lot of good, talented players. I mean, look no further than most of the Vancouver Canucks core right now. They're playing gangbusters, so they deserve some credit as well. But I think Sidney Crosby is going to climb that leaderboard as the Pittsburgh Penguins continue to climb the standings if they continue to win. But, when it comes to the all-time points race, I've said it multiple times. Those who know, the listeners that have been with us for more than this season, that I set out paces for him to do it in 6 years starting last year, so 5 years including this year. 90 points is what he needs to be on to get to that pace this year. He's on pace for that 90 points at this point, on pace for 50 goals to this point. So certainly well on his way to getting at least back into the top 10, or not back, but into the top 10 by the end of this season, which would be certainly a sight to see for the Pittsburgh Penguins and for Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, that's a good pace to set for this season. Again, he's got a few more years to hit. That pace for 50 goals is nuts. That really is. He's not even leading the team in points, which I think is just hilarious, but he's having a year that you never know what kind of gear you're going to get from a 36-year-old. Granted, it's Sidney Crosby, so maybe you had a higher expectations of what a 36-year-old can bring, but I think he's exceeding all of what was expected, like he always has. Enjoy watching it, everyone. Get your popcorn out, buy some tickets, and just enjoy this, because whether or not the team wins, you know you're getting a show from Crosby, because he is trying his darndest.
Yeah, he's trying to will the team in any way, shape, or form that he can. It's not all the same way. He's doing a bunch of different stuff to try to get the Pittsburgh Penguins over the hump. Part of that is faceoffs. Colby Armstrong and Josh Getzlaf absolutely love to bring up faceoff percentages, and Sidney Crosby's one of the best in the National Hockey League, takes some of the most amount of faceoffs in the National Hockey League as well, so it's not like it's even a small sample size. Sid's just been great, but as you mentioned, he's not even leading the Pittsburgh Penguins in points. Mm-hmm. That honor currently is bestowed upon one Jake Guentzel, and those two have been a phenomenal 1-2 punch for the Pittsburgh Penguins all season long. You look at since Thanksgiving, which is a 10-game sample size. Sidney Crosby, not a point per game, but he has 9 points in those 10 games, 5 goals, 4 assists. Jake Guentzel has 11 points in those 10 games, 6 goals and 5 assists. And as we mentioned, why they're so important for the Pittsburgh Penguins, when Crosby scores a point in that time, in those 10 games, the Penguins are 4-2-1. Just when he scores a singular point. When he doesn't score a point, which has only happened 3 of the last 10, 0-1-2. So clearly, these two are the heartbeat of the team. They feed off of each other. I don't want to hear Guentzel's good because he plays with Crosby, because it's not the case. Because at the end of the day, if anybody should see that, it's Penguins fans, because look at, doesn't matter who you're playing with, the finishing has been an issue. Jake Guentzel's finding his finishing, 7 goals in the last 10 games, and these two just in general all season long have been dominant.
Yeah, heading into that game against the Arizona Coyotes, Money Puck put something out that Jake Guentzel was among the quote-unquote unluckiest players in the league, right, in terms of goal scoring based on talent. Which, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. He's been having more of a playmaking season so far. But ever since that game, I mean, then he scored, ever since they tweeted that, he scored twice in, or twice against Arizona, and then picked up another goal in Montreal. You think he's doing pretty okay on turning his luck around, right? He's finding that skill, he's finding that rhythm, and we do all have to remember he didn't have a preseason. He didn't really have a training camp per se. He came right in day one of the regular season, and that's where it all started. Mm-hmm. He didn't have that run-up, so the fact that we are 28 games into the season, and we would assume he's fully healthy by now, but again, you never know, just because he's been playing. He hasn't missed a game yet. Even if he is still hampered with something, or even if it was a slow start, he's leading the team in points, and he's been among the... I mean, that first week when Malkin went off, Jake Guentzel was right there with him, with about as many assists. So Jake's been doing this since the beginning of the year, since the puck drop of the season. So this is a great pace for him to be at. And hey, unlucky or not, he's building on it. He's adding to it. And if for what it's worth, Ricard Raquel is also pretty high on that list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ricard Raquel really has been unlucky this year.
He has been. I mean, not to mention the fact that he's injured right now and has been injured for the past 3 weeks. So luck is not following Ricard Raquel. You hope that he plays better when he comes back. But for Jake Guentzel specifically, I'm going to let you take a guess here. Penguins have played what? You said 28 games?
Yep.
How many of those games has Jake Guentzel been held off the score sheet? It's not many.
It's not many. And I think I just looked at this too, because I can remember... there was that run that Crosby went on for a while where he was only held off for a single game.
Mm-hmm.
I bet Guentzel's been held off for 3, because I think I just looked at this and I forget the number.
That's close. He's been held off the score sheet 5 times out of the 28 games this season. Absolutely ridiculous stuff from Jake Guentzel, who has over 30 points, over a point per game. So does Sidney Crosby. I mean, these two have been the heartbeat of this team. I mentioned it already, but it's true. Like, if these two aren't performing, where would this team be? And the answer would be in the basement of the Eastern Conference, probably the basement of the National Hockey League. These two have been so good, especially at 5-on-5. I mean, you look at Jake Guentzel's currently 1 point behind, I believe, Nathan MacKinnon for first place in the NHL in 5-on-5 points. Sidney Crosby is tied for 4th in even strength points right now. These two have been absolutely phenomenal this season, and their chemistry is something that is rare in the National Hockey League, I would say, especially to a level that they play at right now, which is not, let's just beat you with blinding speed and immense talent. It's a lot of hard-working points that these two get.
It is. It's all those 5-on-5 points. They have, with the power play struggling the way it has been, at least before Arizona, yeah, they had no choice but to collect those 5-on-5 points. They had no choice but to make sure they were scoring on 5-on-5 to keep the Penguins in games and help them win what they did. I mean, the power play was costing them countless wins, but the fact that, you know, they had Sidney Crosby, Jake Guentzel to kind of rely on, at that 5-on-5 at even strength. It gave them a chance no matter the situation, and they're winning them the hard. They were winning games the hard way. Those two are putting up points the hard way with unreal numbers, and that's why they were for a long time. You know, 1 and 2 on that list that you just mentioned there. I didn't realize that they had fallen that far, actually.
Yeah, they were 1 and 2 for a long time. Nathan MacKinnon has been also very, very good at even strength. So he currently is in first place. But you look at Sidney Crosby, he's nowhere near the top of the hard odds. We alluded to it a little bit earlier. Yeah. It's something that, you know, if you're a betting man and you think the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to make the postseason, if they make the postseason, he should win the Hart Trophy. At the pace that he's currently at, with the team that's currently around him, now you expect and hope, as we'll talk about a little bit later, that Kyle Dubas gets him a little bit more help, some of the health coming back, you know, Ricard Raquel getting back in the lineup. You would assume at some point Brian Rust comes back into the lineup, even though there's a lot, you know, to be determined on his injury, but you assume that he gets some players back. You assume that the team improves as the season goes on, or at least the team gets some more help as the season goes on. But the way that he has been just leading this team to this point, it's kind of ridiculous that he is as low as he is. And like I mentioned, the latest odds I could find on BetMGM were Crosby at plus 8,000, tied for 17th with Winnipeg Jets Kyle Connor. So, you know, if you want to lay a futures bet, Plus 8,000 is pretty good odds to put your numbers on one of the top five players in the history of hockey who's having an absolutely ridiculous season.
Yeah, because that what I feel like those betting places, those sources don't take into account is the fact that it is human beings watching this sport voting on these players. Josh Yowie, I think it was, at the beginning of the year, before the year started, mentioned that, no, those voters love a good story. Hockey writers love a good story, love a good narrative. And the narrative of a 36-year-old Sidney Crosby, like I said, before the season started, willing the Penguins back into the playoffs, is, you know, all the reason these voters need to have a good narrative. Now you add on that they were terrible to start the year, and even through being not great, Sidney Crosby was right up there with some of the best. That's just more reason. So I think that's a, not that we're a betting show, but that's a really good quality bet right there.
Yeah,
with
it's good
those
value.
Kind of numbers. That's a great value. Yeah, it's the odds may legitimately be long, even at the end of the year. You know, Connor McDavid, ever since that coaching change, Connor McDavid has been lighting the world on fire.
He has.
So that's going to be a tough sell.
Yeah.
But, I mean, entering the league, I mean, how many MVPs does Sidney Crosby have? Two?
I two think or three? He has two, but
entering the league, you'd have figured he'd have more at this point, right? Again, these are humans voting here. This isn't robots. Maybe these voters think to themselves, well, he deserves another for his career's work.
He's a 2-time Hart Trophy winner. So yeah, twice.
He keeps up this pace and he gets this team back into the playoffs. Oh yeah, he'd have my vote. He'd have my vote in a heartbeat.
Yeah, you mentioned Josh Yowie. He's been championing this Sidney Crosby, you know, for MVP thing for the last little while. Rob Rossi, his colleague at The Athletic, is doing the same exact thing. And when you look at the numbers in the NHL ranks, considering the fact, and I'll mention the even strength points once again, considering the fact the Penguins' power play has not just been bad, but it has been dormant. They went 0 for 37. They didn't score a power play goal in over a month, and he's still where he's at. It is ridiculous. He's tied for fourth in the entire National Hockey League in goals, which has historically not been a stat that he leads the league in or is near the top of the league in. Like we mentioned, he's on pace to score 50 goals this season. That would be the first time in a very long time that Sidney Crosby's reached the 50-goal mark. I believe he's only done it once before in his career, but he's tied for first in even strength goals right now. So getting it done at 5-on-5, tied for 23rd in points, which, yes, might be why he's down at 17th in the odds, because I don't think odds makers really pay attention to the sport of hockey, but he's tied for fourth in even strength goals. Like, guys, he's absolutely ridiculous. So Sidney Crosby continuing to impress, continuing to be a guy that should be on Hart ballots by the end of the season, especially if the Pittsburgh Penguins can get back up higher in the standings, which they're 2 points behind, I think, 3 or 4 teams right now. So a couple more good games, a string of 3 or 4 wins in a row here could get them back up into a playoff spot by the time Christmas rolls around.
Yeah, not having games for the next 2 days isn't helpful. But if my site wants to load, if I'm remembering standings correctly, they're a win out. They're 2 points back of 31 points, which is where, so they're at 29. Meaning just one more win would put them at 31, tied for or in a wild card spot.
Yeah.
And the Metro is extremely tight. That was one of the first things Kyle Dubas said when he started speaking to the media the other day was, you know, that, yeah, the Penguins are, we're here having this discussion. You know, this, we're here to discuss how not great the Penguins have been so far. He did not at the Rangers and someone else in the Flyers for having good seasons so far. But then looked at the, then mentioned almost by name, the Devils, Hurricanes, and Islanders as having not great seasons, and then having similar conversations. So that if there is any reason to still have hope, it's that the Penguins at 29 points are only a handful of points behind the Flyers and Islanders, who are 3-2, not even in the wild card, 3-2 in the Metro.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can look at it as at one point in the very near history, the Penguins were closer to the basement of the East than they were in the playoffs. But again, the East and the Metro are both so tight and so extremely, I don't want to say volatile, but
there's a lot of parity.
There's a lot of parity. There's a lot of midness going on, but it's also really good. It's all, these teams look mid, but they're also really good. So it's hard to really describe, but the Penguins are right there. It didn't help surrendering a pity point to the Canadiens, who, you know, both teams entered that game with 27 standing points, but walking out on top at least helps with the Metro rankings, and they're getting there. A couple more wins here and there, a couple of losses from the right teams. Since next thing you know, we could be sitting here having the discussion of Penguins are number two in the Metro, as if the first week of December never happened.
Yeah. So obviously right now it's all about the Pittsburgh Penguins collecting wins, and you look at who's coming up on the schedule. Those wins will do a lot of the legwork for them. Toronto is ahead of them in the standings. Carolina's coming up in the schedule. They're ahead of them in the standings. Minnesota's played some better hockey as of late. They're coming up next week in a home game. So, and then you have two games against the Islanders late in this month of December. So you got a lot of games against teams that are right in the thick of it with you. So a very important schedule for the Pittsburgh Penguins. For them at this point of the season, it's all about, you know, keeping a focus on themselves and making sure that they win the next game ahead of them. And right now they're stacking, or they need to stack victories, because, you know, you can't continue to lose points and fall behind that pack, because that pack can get away from you really quickly. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's look outside of the Pittsburgh Penguins in the organization, outside of the team as it currently stands. Couple players head into World Juniors, or at least expected to head to World Juniors in a couple of weeks. First time in a while that that's happened. We'll talk about that and the power play coming to life right after the break. Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by InsideThePenguins.com. For what usually World Juniors comes around, and both of us enjoy watching World Juniors. It's one of the most electrifying hockey tournaments of the year, electrifying hockey that you watch all year long, maybe outside of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But normally, there's no Penguins flavor in there. There's no sprinkling of seasoning. There's no depth player on Team Latvia usually. But this year the Penguins could have as many as three representatives at the World Junior Tournament. First and foremost, number one first pick of the draft for the Pittsburgh Penguins this year, Braden Jaeger, has officially made Team Canada. Jaeger has had a tremendous season with the Moose Jaw Warriors of the WHL. A lot of Penguins fans excited about his eventual arrival in Pittsburgh. They'll get to watch him on a big stage for Team Canada at the World Juniors. But not only that, Team Finland has released its preliminary roster as of right now, and Emil Pieniniemi and Kalle Kangas both make the preliminary roster for Team Finland. All three of those players from this year's draft. So a shout out to, I mean, how much does he get for credit wise? It was technically Kyle Dubas's draft, but three players from Kyle Dubas's first draft in Pittsburgh making it to World Juniors, something that hasn't happened in a pretty long time. There's not been a lot of Penguins representatives at the World Juniors in recent years. So three players from this year's draft going, that's a good sign for the Pittsburgh Penguins, at least early on from this year's draft.
Yeah, it's hard to nail down the last time the Penguins had a player at World Juniors. I think Sam Poulin was on...
He was on preliminary rosters. He never made it to the actual World Juniors roster.
I didn't think so. I think he was the first one I could think of. I mean, outside of that, because the Penguins have had a thin prospect pool for so long that even some of their top prospects just weren't at this level, or they were too old, because this is 20 and under?
Yeah.
It's 20 and under. Or they just weren't maybe old enough. I mean, I know Jaeger's 18, but maybe they just weren't at that level yet. They've just kind of missed the boat. The Penguins haven't had very many prospects that line up with this tournament perfectly. I mean, I think Crosby was... No, he wasn't. He was playing in the NHL. Don't even let me continue my sentence. unless he played before he was drafted. But again, not a Penguin pick at that point. So I can't think of anyone else that I know may have... It's just not coming to me.
I have the most recent one, and he didn't really play all that much, but Joel Blomqvist played for Finland in 2021. But skater-wise, that goes back a little further. But I did remember, while you were speaking, I was like, oh yeah, Blomqvist did go the 1 year. He didn't really play all that much. Yeah. He was the backup for Team Finland, but I remember he qualified, so we have to give him his flowers for that.
That counts, and that absolutely counts. And I forgot about that one too, but yeah, it's hard to really nail down Penguins prospects that have been a part of this tournament. So the fact that we could watch three there, that's awesome to see. And I'm just trying to think of any other... I mean, Owen Pickering was maybe going to be a part of it. I think that he was on some early predictions, but wasn't invited. So be it. It happens. It'll be finally something for Penguins fans to watch on Boxing Day and the week after. I forget how long that tournament is.
It's usually like a week and a half, a week. In 2 weeks, maybe. But, you know, at the end of the day, maybe we'll see Braden Jaeger play with the, you know, projected first overall pick Macklin Celebrini. You know, that'd be a fun combination to watch to see what Jaeger looks like next to the, you know, expected number one overall pick next season, the future San Jose Shark. But regardless, at the end of the day, you know, a kudos goes out to the Penguins, you know, scouting staff, and a kudos goes out to Kyle Dubas for putting together a draft that has produced a handful of players that get to go to the biggest tournament in junior hockey. But let's move things over and talk a little bit about the NHL squad, because we got to talk about it, Horwat. We've bashed on them for over a calendar month, 0-37 through 13 games, and then four power play goals for the Penguins in the past 2 games, 2-5 against the Arizona Coyotes, including a Carter game-winning goal, and then 2-3 last night against the Montreal Canadiens that brought them back from 3-1 to tied 3-3, not only scoring power play goals, but scoring power play goals that are meaningful and in meaningful moments. Good sign for the Pittsburgh Penguins moving forward.
It's hilarious, by the way. Not only did the Penguins go from 0 and... I get the number confused. I see 36, I see 37. Who cares? The Penguins went from not scoring a power play goal in over a month to having one 5-on-5 goal in the last 2 games.
Yeah.
And winning both those games. That's the nutty part of it, I think, is that all of a sudden, like, a light switch went off. They found success on the special teams, yeesh on the penalty kill, but found success with the man advantage, which is what has the consensus kind of been the last couple of weeks, is that this power play is the reason why they're losing. This power play could turn the a couple of power play goals here and there could turn the season around. Erik Karlsson said, he was thinking about the percentages. I think they were about 10% at the time that he said this. If it was up 5 points, up to 15, you know, it's still not league average, but it is enough to, you know, kick the rocks a little bit and get things going and give them a couple more points and a couple more wins. Mm-hmm. Then next thing you know, they're in a playoff spot. Nolichari told me that this was a couple weeks before this. This was a couple weeks ago before he got injured even. That you can see it in them. They're a goal away from lighting the world on fire. They got that one early against it. In the first attempt against Arizona, it was in the opening couple minutes. I can remember just laughing in the press box with Vince Communal sitting next to me. We just started dying. But then everything kind of started rolling after that all of a sudden. They're not gripping their sticks as tight. I'm not saying what Nolichari said is exactly true, but so far it seems it. He said they're a goal away. You can see it. And when they get it, it's going to explode. I also find that exact quote again. But so far, so good. That's exactly what's happened.
Yeah, 4-for-8 in the past two games, which is 50%, which is ridiculous at a clip for the Pittsburgh Penguins power play. Even, you know, I don't know if this was the same exact media availability, but Erik Karlsson said after the one game, he said, we went 0-for-5. If we score one of those goals and go 1-for-5, that's 20%. That's league average penalty or power play right now. We don't need to start scoring 3-4 goals a game. They just need to start scoring one, you know, getting that goal, making sure that there's momentum to be built off of. And that's what they did on Tuesday, and they continued to carry that momentum through Wednesday night's game. And it's something that you mentioned, the penalty kill. Even the penalty kill that is struggling right now a little bit. I mean, they're missing, what, Nola Chari, because you just mentioned he's injured, obviously. Matt Nieto, who a lot of people are saying he's worth nothing. He's a good penalty killer, and that's worth something. And Brian Rust. They're missing three penalty-killing forwards, and yes, they have a good handful of them that are out there. I think Jonathan Gruden has been all right since stepping up. I think Mark Johnstone did fine last Friday night in his 1 minute of penalty-kill time, but you're missing three guys. And then you also see that, well, yes, they've given up goals. They gave up two against Arizona. They gave up another one against Montreal. They stepped up when it mattered the most. They didn't give up a single shot on goal in that late third-period power play for Montreal. 3 minutes on the clock, they take a penalty, not a single shot on goal, and a great job by the Pittsburgh Penguins penalty kill. In overtime, a 4-on-3, that is an impossible situation. Yes, Alex Nedeljkovic made a crap ton of saves in that instance, and he was great. And sometimes your best penalty killer has to be your goaltender, an adage as old as time. But at the same time, look at the way that he was able to see those pucks. Nobody was in front of him. Ryan Graves, I saw on multiple occasions, and people are not going to like me for this because people like to bash on Ryan Graves. Multiple occasions, he cleared the net front out and made sure that Alex Nedeljkovic saw that puck cleanly, and he swallowed it up, and it was harmless. Why? Because a good job in the net front by Graves. We've seen a lot of good play from Chris Letang in the penalty kill. That unit has stepped up when it matters most, even at their times where they're struggling, which is right now. So a good job by the penalty kill there. I think Mike Vellucci's done a heck of a job with that unit, but, you know, the power play is the reason for the season right now, and they've looked good over the last two games. What have you noticed that's different about this unit in the last two games, if anything, than when they were on their 0-for-37 streak?
I don't know if there's too much that I've noticed. Again, like I said, whenever it was struggling, I'm not going to be the guy that can tell you the schemes and what exactly is changing and what's not. I can tell you some of the words that these players have said, though. Jeff Carter said after his two-goal game that, well, he used a curse word here, so I'm going to try and do what I can here. He said quite simply, they're shooting the puck more, they're simplifying it, and he thinks that was a big reason for it. He said, sometimes if you just throw it into the stuff, good things will happen. And if for his power play goal specifically, it's exactly kind of what it was, just firing it on net. Jeff Carter, big body in front, was able to get a stick on it and deflect it in. At least from what I'm seeing, that's what they're doing a little bit more. So they're just shooting it. They're just taking the opportunity to fire away. I mean, if you really consider, yeah, it's annoying when the crowd yells at them to just shoot the puck, but they weren't doing it. So the crowd, you know, kind of had a reason to have those thoughts. If, I mean, maybe I'm not remembering correctly, they didn't do that much against Arizona. So clearly the Penguins were shooting it. It just by going off of crowd noise and post-game quotes. They were just simplifying things. They were just shooting it more. Mike Sullivan always says, even if a shot doesn't go in or doesn't even reach the net, it is forcing the opposition to make different decisions, to maybe make a wrong decision, to change the momentum of what's going on the ice. So I would say the only thing that I'm noticing is different is they're just firing it more. They're just letting it go from short, from long, just getting pucks on net.
The one big change has been Valtteri Puustinen. No, I'm just
that
kidding.
Too.
I mean, he has gone on the first power play unit, and I think he's played well on the first power play unit, but that's not the big change that has happened. Valtteri Puustinen obviously is part of that change, but in all seriousness, both Guentzel goals were fed from below the net. What has been the biggest gripe about this power play? They try too much at the top. They're floating around the top. They're stagnant at the top of the zone. It's easy to read. Both of Guentzel's goals over the past two games on the power play have been fed from Sidney Crosby below the goal line. And the other two goals are redirections. Now, one hit off of, I believe it was Mike Matheson of the Montreal Canadiens, but two redirection goals. The other one, the game winner, was Jeff Carter in front of the net. Redirection, gets the deflection, gets the goal past Connor Ingram. So I think one of the biggest things I've noticed, and this might not be that they changed the system, this might just be that they're executing the system better, they're playing a lot less up top. And when they are up top, they're moving a lot more. They're activating a lot quicker instead of passing it between the left flank to the quarterback, quarterback to the right flank, back to the quarterback. They did a lot of that when they were struggling to get anything going. I think the prime example was the first goal, the goal that actually broke the streak. Malkin goes to the point. Carlson, instead of accepting the puck and then dusting it off, he takes a one-timer. Doesn't happen very often, but he takes a one-timer. Now, the one-timer is saved by Connor Ingram, but then you look at what happens after that, and that's where I think the improvements have been made. Crosby gets the puck retrieval. He drives low, gets it to Pustinen, who fills the hole on the left flank. Pustinen takes the pass from Crosby, and where does he go? Back to the point. So it's not taking it completely out of the game. There is a point of that, but when he goes to the point, Carlson immediately gets back to him. It's a give and go, and the second it puck gets back on Pustinen's stick, he drives down towards the goal line. Crosby's below the goal. He gives it down to Crosby below, and that opens up the middle of the ice. Why? Because you're using the entire zone, front to back. Opens up the middle of the ice. Jake Gensel's right there in a soft spot, and he's able to put the puck in the back of the net because he's talented, because he has a good shot, because he was given an opportunity in a high-danger scoring area. I think that is a prime example of what this power play has done better over the last two games. They're moving the puck more. They're taking it off of the point, and they're shooting when they have the lanes. Erik Karlsson had a lane there. He took the shot. It got in on Connor Ingram. They retrieved the puck, and they continued to cycle. And that was even on one half. After that shot was on net, it was three players that touched the puck before Gensel, and it, all in a quick succession. So I implore you to go back and look at that power play if you're listening to this. That's what it's supposed to be at its best. They were able to execute on that one, and they've executed three more times since it happened. So we're seeing a positive regression of the mean, and it's a great thing for the Pittsburgh Penguins on the power play.
Yeah, it's just what they needed to find. They just needed to find a couple of goals, gain the confidence, gain the momentum in themselves. Put it this way, if I'm remembering this numbers correctly, the season, it hit a season low of 9.48 percentage. 31st in the, it was the same exact as the St. Louis Blues at the time. So if you want to say 31st or 30th in the league, be my guest. The fact that the Capitals are still dead last is wild, by the way.
Yeah.
Speaking of unlucky goal scorers, Alex Ovechkin. But the Penguins' power play season low hit 9.48. In just two games since, they've already gone up to 13.41. Still pretty low, only 27th, but it's getting there. League average is 20 right now.
Yeah.
So you got a few more points to go still, but it wouldn't take too long. I mean, again, they're still one of the least penalized against teams in the league. Get a couple of those notched up. I mean, maybe you get more chances. Maybe you find the back of the net a little more. It's that progress is being made. They're getting penalized a little bit more against 27th in the league as well.
Yeah, eight still, in the last two games will do that.
Yeah, that will. But they're getting there. They're getting there. It's like, I'll keep going back to what Nolichari said. He said they just need one. They just need one. And next thing you know, they got the one. They've gotten 3 cents. So, I mean, again, that Arizona game was wild in terms of every single goal not being at 5-on-5. So it's,
well, that and Francois Saint-Laurent was trying to get MVP votes himself.
That first period was stupid. But yeah, it's, everything's been looking up ever since. So they can ride this momentum. They're gonna have tough competition against Toronto on Saturday. I think Minnesota's a bit in shambles at the moment, but off the ice wise, we'll see how things go. I think if Nolichari's words hold true, this is all they need. That one game was all they needed.
Yeah, we'll see if they can build on it. And like you mentioned, got down to 9.48. So what did they do in response? They put 4.8 on the power play. That's Valtteri Pustinen. Since then, 50% success rate. All I'm saying. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Kyle Dubas apparently looking for reinforcements. I have three names that could be fitting that bill coming up later in the season. So we'll talk about that after the break. Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast. A feel-good Thursday for the Pittsburgh Penguins after back-to-back wins. Obviously, a big one last night over the Montreal Canadiens, who they're in a dogfight with for positioning in the Eastern Conference wildcard race. It's December. A lot of scoreboard watching coming over the last couple of weeks because of where the Penguins have fallen to at that point. So I'm sure there's a lot of scoreboard watching still, but a lot of games to go here, Horwath. Over 50 games left on the schedule for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Plenty of time, but you got to make sure that you're taking advantage of that time. We'll see if the Penguins can continue to do that on Saturday for Hockey Night in Canada against the Toronto Maple Leafs. But interesting report coming out yesterday from David Pagnotta of the Fourth Period saying Kyle Dubas looking for trade options to bolster both the bottom six and the third pairing. Now, that report, while being the most captain obvious thing that David Pagnotta could have absolutely said, it's not surprising in the least. It's something that does spark a little bit more conversation as to who is currently on the market and who could fit the Pittsburgh Penguins' needs. Now, there is a quick reminder here. The Penguins and the entire NHL go into a holiday roster freeze from December 19th to December 28th. So if a move is going to happen before pretty much the end of the calendar year, it's going to have to happen in the next couple of days. But if not, you might see something happen at the turn of the calendar, December 29th, maybe New Year's Eve, maybe New Year's Day, who knows. But there is a roster freeze, so there's going to be a little bit of a quiet down when it comes to trade talks around the entire NHL. I have three names here, Horwat. We're going to go through them. I want you to rank them after we're done, but let's go one by one. The first one that I looked at is from San Jose. You know, Kyle Dubas making a trade with San Jose earlier in the year. Obviously, a couple people know the player that came back in exchange for that one. But San Jose has another player that intrigues me a little bit. Bleacher Report trade targets has Anthony Duclair as a potential trade target, not just for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but in the entirety of the NHL. He has 11 points this season in 26 games, brings a lot of physicality to that bottom six, has historically shown a lot of speed at the NHL level, but I'm not exactly sure where he's at. I haven't watched a lot of him over the past two seasons, specifically because he only played 20 games in the regular season last year. He played 20 games in the playoffs, but he was coming off of an Achilles injury, which makes it very hard to think that he's going to be at the same speed that he always has been, but still, a solid player that went out and put up 11 points in the playoffs last season in 20 games for the Florida Panthers.
I don't think I'm too enticed by Anthony Duclair anymore. I don't know what it is. It just hasn't, I guess it's just not, excuse me, my cup of tea for the Penguins. Just not ideal, I'd say.
Okay.
I like the idea just because of a trade at all, just making the moves, forcing the hands of someone to do. Maybe adding Duclair also forces someone else in the lineup to do something more. Like, maybe it's one of those things. But at the same time, I'm just, this isn't one that I totally jive with, at least in my head.
I mean, when I look at him, it's a matter of what is the player that he is. Because if you look at what happened before the Achilles injury, the year before his Achilles injury, scored 31 goals for the Florida Panthers. Comes off that Achilles injury, scores 9 points in the last 20 games of the season last year, still probably trying to recover, looked good in the playoffs last year, and has looked all right on a pretty bad San Jose Sharks team. They've been better as of late, but they were historically bad early in the season. So not sure what you're going to get with Anthony Duclair, but because of that, I think the price is driven down a little bit. Not to mention that he's on an expiring deal that's worth $3 million, which is a lot more manageable than a lot of the players that are going to be on the trade market this year.
Yeah, it's manageable, but has never jived. And you're right, I think I would absolutely ride the same thing that you are, that you did. It's which Anthony Duclair are you getting?
Mm-hmm.
And that's too much of a risk, I would say.
I think it is a bottom six addition. He brings a little bit of grit.
That's not terrible, yeah.
He brings a little bit of nastiness. I don't think he's going to be a top player, or top six player, excuse me, for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But to be a third liner, I mean, if you're hitching your wagon to Jesse Puljujarvi, who's coming off double hip surgery, a guy in Anthony Duclair who had an Achilles injury last year before the season, that's, you know, it's a similar gamble. The price tag's probably a little bit more, though. The $3 million is probably more than anything that Puljujarvi is going to sign if he does indeed sign with the Pittsburgh Penguins in the coming weeks. The second name I have here, another forward, this one a center. This one a little less manageable with the cap number at $4.8 million in the final year of his contract. Elias Lindholm of the Calgary Flames. He has 18 points, 7 goals, 11 assists in 29 games this season. Has 19-plus goals in each of the last 5 seasons, including a 42-goal campaign in 2021-22 for the Calgary Flames. To me, this is the Tampa move. Like, this is the move that, hey, we know who we want. We're going to pay a lot of money and a lot of assets to go get them. If you think you're close to being that Stanley Cup contender, Elias Lindholm's the guy you go get if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins. But is that where they're at right now? I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure Kyle Dubas is quite sold on this team being one piece away. So I don't know if Elias Lindholm's really on his radar right now. But if you get to that feeling where, you know, Rust and Raquel come back and they both look really good. You know, Puljujarvi looks good. O'Connor fits really well back in that third line. And you're saying, okay, we're one piece away. We get Elias Lindholm as a third line center. You get to do the whole bump down Eller, move over Achari shtick. If you're one move away, Elias Lindholm's probably the guy you go to get, and you probably pay a little bit to get some of that money retained, especially because it's in the last year, and I'm not sure who you send back in the other end of things, but Elias Lindholm would be a tremendous addition for the Penguins if they're able to, one, fit it, and two, if it makes sense at some point in the season. Not at this moment, but I think it's a name to monitor.
I think that, yeah, that's a good one. I like that one a lot more. You're right, sending a player back is difficult because most of the players on this Penguins roster have trade clauses, and almost always Canadian teams are on that just because Canada. So that would make moving a reasonable trade asset to the Calgary Flames a little tougher. But that's a great option, I think. I'd be with this one way more. Another thing, too, is you're right. At the moment, going off of what David Pagnotta said, which is looking to build out the third pairing in the bottom six, that's almost exactly what Kyle Dubas said to the media too. He said if the depth isn't working, that's on him. He needs to be one that goes out and finds what can work. And when it came to the third pairing, Kyle Dubas pretty much said he wants someone to take that opportunity and run with it. If not, he'll find someone. So yeah, it's pretty clear that these are the kind of things he's looking for right now. Elias Lindholm doesn't fit that mold yet, but again, like you said, that is a name to watch down the line if the depth wakes up and if that third pairing finds some anchors.
Now again, that's a little bit of a dream scenario because Elias Lindholm is a top six center on most, if not all, teams in the National Hockey League. Getting him to be your third line center is like I said, it's the Tampa Bay move. Going, seeing what you want, getting what you want, paying a king's ransom for it. They did it for Tanner Janot last year. They've done it for Brandon Hagel. They did it for Barkley Goodrow at one point. They did it for Nick Paul at one point. It's the Tampa Bay move. If you think that you're in a position to go for it, go for it with the best player on the board, the player that fits best for you, and I think that's Elias Lindholm. So we're both in agreement that that's a future option. That's a name to monitor. But the last name on this list, somebody that I think we brought up before, a player that is not overstaying his welcome, but he's on a very, very congested blue line. That's Tony DeAngelo of the Carolina Hurricanes. The Athletic Trade Targets Board has him up there. I would say he brings another offensive option to the Penguins' blue line. Obviously, right now they have two pretty stellar offensive defensemen in Erik Karlsson and Chris Letang, but he brings that terrific puck moving and a great skater on the back end. He's a very, very manageable cap hit on the final year of his contract at $1.675 million. I believe it was actually only a 1-year contract.
Yeah.
Double digit in goals and over 40 points in the last three full seasons he's played, and he has a little bit of nastiness to his game. Him and John Ludvig, I don't know where that came from. Him and John Ludvig make a pretty compelling third pairing there.
That is...
Who is Victor Ludvig?
I don't know. I don't know where you pulled that from. that's an interesting one. You're right, he definitely has that scoring ability. Real curious to know if the Penguins want or are aiming for another offensive defenseman, because, I mean, that's what Ty Smith is doing in the AHL right now, if they really needed that needed that option. This one's just interesting, though, especially because this one fits the mold of almost the exact gauntlet that Dubas just threw down to the third pairing of, hey, like, I want someone to come in and run with this third pairing opportunity. If you guys can't do it, I'll find someone who can.
Yeah.
Tony DeAngelo, for better or worse, can do that.
Yeah.
We talked about it before. This is a player that you got to separate the on ice from the off ice and look at what he can do on the ice for the time being. And if he can help the team, he can help the team. We'll see what Kyle Dubas would think of that. I don't know if he necessarily fits because, again, we have those two offensive defensemen already. Are you looking for more of a shutdown, more of a shutdown third pairing guy? But, you know, I would say he lands in the middle of the conversation here. I think it does go Lindholm because everyone loves a good home run swing trade. Then DeAngelo and then Duclair of these three options that you read to me.
Yeah, fair enough. I would say Lindholm is, like I said, that's probably the dream scenario. I would say Anthony Duclair is probably the most realistic in my eyes. And I know he's third on your list. I really like taking a shot on Anthony Duclair, especially if you need some depth scoring, especially if you want to be harder to play against, which Anthony Duclair has been hard to play against his entire career. By the way, quick update. Victor Ludwig handles full spectrum of loan products for Latham and Watkins in New York, New York. So sounds like he's a loan shark. I don't know where I got that name from, but, you know, Victor, congratulations. You got to mention on the podcast.
Free promo. Way to go, bud.
free promo for a loan shark. That's what we do here, apparently. But, you know, Horwat, the Pittsburgh Penguins, it's only two games, but they've certainly gotten better results. Now, they didn't look great last night against the Montreal Canadiens, but they looked a little bit better against the Arizona Coyotes. So we'll see which team shows up on Saturday against the Toronto Maple Leafs, a team that the Penguins have beaten in recent history. 3-2 win back on Thanksgiving weekend. So we'll see if they're able to repeat that against Toronto on hockey night in Canada. And they don't have to worry about John Tavares's 1,000th point. He took care of that earlier this week on Long Island. Some sweet, sweet revenge for Johnny T after getting booed there relentlessly since he left for Toronto. But that's going to do it for this episode of The Tip of the Iceberg. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time.